Watch podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch podcast, we're going to discuss an article that is at beef.unl.edu titled Managing Burned Pastures After a Wildfire, How to Graze. To have a conversation, I'm joined today by two of the co-authors, Dr. Jerry Valesky and Dr. Mitch Stevenson. Dr. Jerry Valesky is our Extension Range and Forage Specialist based at the West Central Research and Extension Center at North Platte. And Dr. Mitch Stevenson is a Range Management Specialist based at the Panhandle Research and Extension Center at Scotts Bluff. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, we've certainly had quite the month here in Nebraska. A lot of wildfires. We're approaching, I think, over 800,000 acres now that have burned. For those who own and manage those properties, one of the things that's coming to mind is what can we expect in terms of grazing? How should we be grazing these sites? And one of the things we want to talk about today is it really does depend a lot on the range site, what's gone on in terms of moisture conditions. We've been through a very dry, warm winter. What are we going to expect in terms of moisture? So walk through with us just some key things that you think producers should think through and understand as they think about managing these range sites and returning them back to grazing.
Well, we've had, as you mentioned, a pretty significant year in terms of wildfires, and both in the Nebraska Sandhills as well as the here in Lincoln County, Southeast Lincoln County, in what's called the Lusk Canyons. Now, there's a big difference between those two sites, obviously, with the Sandhills, and then in the canyons of Lincoln County, we're dealing with a different soil type, or we call it a different ecological site. And on the heavier soils of the Lusk Hills, things are a little bit more forgiving in terms of the erosion potential from the wind. Certainly, there can be water erosion in both. But when we have a wildfire, and I'm strictly speaking about the Lusk Canyons, we're dealing with an area that did have, in many of the places, quite a bit of cedar trees that burned as well. But people have to keep in mind that these grasses are perennials. Most of them are perennials, and they will come back. A key to this, of course, is going to be adequate rainfall. And we do see many times an increase of annual weeds after the fire. And this is really what a fire is, a disturbance to these rangelands. And so having some weeds in there can be pretty common, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. A key message I tell for producers is that one of the things that they do need to be careful with is how heavy they are grazing. So first of all, whether or not they graze this year is going to depend on rainfall. And in many cases, it shouldn't be a problem that they could turn out to these pastures in mid to late summer or this fall if there's a specific need that they need to get out on some pasture. But regardless, they should be at a bit of a lower stocking rate and leave a little bit of extra residue out there.
Yeah, following up on that, Jerry, you know, there's been a few fires there north of North Platte that we'd monitored over the years. One was the Betty's Way fire that was in 2024. And that fire, especially, I think we got just really good precipitation that spring. It was a dormant season fire. And that spring got really good precipitation. And I remember going out in late June, early July, and having a hard time finding the burned line of where it had burned and not burned. And so, you know, the recovery seemed to be fairly quick on some of those fires if we get the precipitation. But, you know, as you mentioned, the total acres burned, numbers that I have is of March 18th. So I know more has burned since then, especially with those fires near Ashby and Hyannis. The numbers I have are about 823,000 acres have burned this year. And to kind of put that in context with the data that we have from the National Interagency Fire Center, as well as the Monitoring Trends and Burn Severity website, between 1984 and 2025, these are wildfires over 1,000 acres, that amounted to about 1.16 million acres. And so over that, you know, roughly 40-year period. And so really kind of unprecedented in what we've seen in terms of the size, especially with that Morrill fire in Morrill Garden, Arthur counties. And so Being out there on the burn pastures this last week, it definitely does look bare out there. And there are a lot of choppy sands in that area. But when you really think about it, and as you walk through a lot of that area, what we don't see is just the tremendous root amounts that are just below the surface, right? We see some of that sand moving on the top, but not very far below that. Think about as much vegetation as was above ground. There's just as much or more below ground. And a lot of that's in the top foot or so of soil there. And so there's a tremendous mat there that holds a lot of that soil together. And, Dr. Dave Wadeen at the University of Nebraska has done quite a bit of research exploring what it takes to basically destabilize the dunes, and found is it takes a number of years basically having no growth on the top, so killing out the top layer of plants, and before that root structure really starts to break down, and we see a large amount of sand moving. So the dunes start to destabilize essentially more than just some of that sand on the very top moving around. Like Jerry mentioned, like so much is tied to the precipitation. And as we look at past wildfire years that have been, I guess, have more fires than others, we can think back to those years like 1989, the early 2000s, 2012. Some remember that as being a fairly active fire year. Probably one of the larger fire years that we've had was in 2012, previous to this one. And so the concern is what's precipitation going to do this spring and summer, and how is that going to drive that regrowth potential that's really going to happen there? We oftentimes talk of a lot about the litter and standing dead plant material and how important that is in our system, not only as a cover, but also it shades the ground. It helps dissipate some of the rainfall that falls down. It helps hold that soil from wind erosion, those types of things. And so as we think about grazing the year after, a lot of our research for dormant season fires especially would suggest that we'll get just as much growth on of that current year's growth on a burned piece as we would on an unburned. Essentially, the top's burned off, but the grass below it, the roots, the what's going to push that growth early on is going to be the energy stored in the buds and the roots, and then precipitation, sunlight, the right growing conditions are going to drive that after that gets started. And so it's probably not going to be too far off what the current year's production is, but you've lost quite a bit of plant material that was there to kind of help hold the soil and the surface, and as well as offer a little bit of a buffer in some of that grazing. And so the big thing is you want to build that up. We've seen in a number of wildfires researched by Dr. Duroc Twidwell, where they looked at a number of fires across the Great Plains using satellite imagery, that recovery, what it looks like, that signature of that fire. And there's one in particular that I'll talk about just briefly here today, is there was a fire just north of Oshkosh in 2012. Now, this was a growing season fire, so it's a little different than the one that went through, but it wasn't the same footprint. So it was a really dry year in 2012. This fire burned in August 2nd of 2012, and we were looking at it on the Rangeland Analysis Platform, which is a satellite-based program. Anybody can hop on and take a look at it. It's a rangelands.app, and you can see actually the burn scar in 2012. It comes up as the reflectance is much different when you look at the perennial forb and grass cover, and then you can track that over the years. And when we looked at that fire, really what we saw is in 2012, our cover and perennial grass forbs went down. The year after, 2013, and this was a fire in conjunction with drought too, remember. But 2013, it was well below what surrounding area was in terms of the amount of cover. And mostly of that was just it didn't have any of the standing dead plant material from the previous year. But by 2014, it had almost got back up to the same level of cover, which was right around 70%, give or take, where that cover was before. And then by 2014, it was about up back up to that 70%. And then moving forward, it was no different than what it was previously in that. And so we're looking at 1 to 3 years in terms of that signature. Most of the time, it's within 2 years following a fire. You won't even be able to see those scars from that satellite. The other thing that we can look at and measure is the amount of bare ground. And so the bare ground does go up, as you would expect, because there's not as much litter covering that landscape. And so that's a lot of times I think what Jerry and I both talk about is if you are going to graze out there, that you make sure that you are leaving enough of that residual biomass to help build that cover up. I think that's really the adaptive nature of grazing after a wildfire is to be responsive and make sure you're not over grazing it to the point that you're not leaving enough of that cover that's out there.
Yeah, I'd agree. That's a key point. If people, first of all, have the luxury or don't have the luxury of, say, deferring a burned pasture the entire growing season this year, that if they are out there grazing, that they do exactly as you mentioned, be at a lighter stocking rate, matching it with the precipitation and growth that you're getting, and leaving that extra residue, which would be what you could call the standing dead plant material. But also allowing some of that to become litter on the ground surface. That's, of course, really important. And I like your point, too, about the root system. It's just we're very lucky, I guess, in terms of all of our native rangelands that they have some pretty good root systems, and particularly in the sand hills where they can prevent excessive amounts of sand, I guess I should say, from blowing around. Now, of course, there may be some sites that, already had an existing blowout, or what we call the choppy sites, that depending how the next 2 to 4 weeks goes in terms of wind, we still may see a little bit more of an increase in the size of some of those older blowouts. But hopefully we'll get some precipitation and move on into the spring. Now, one of the things that probably contributed to some to this year's wildfires was the fact that last year, 2025, we had a really good growing season, and our pasture production in most all of these areas was anywhere from 15 to 25% above our long-term average production. And so, that just literally added more fuel to the fire.
Jerry, you just hit on something there that I'd like to go a little further with. We did have some good moisture last summer, and actually starting into the fall, we had some decent moisture. So in many cases, these plants were going into the fall with a pretty good root system and a pretty good carbohydrate storage in place. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be for both cool and warm season grasses, more so in late summer for the warm season grasses, which had a really good growing season in general, like I mentioned. But both cool and warm would have gone into the winter in most places in pretty good shape. They would have had their energy or carbohydrate reserves built up pretty well. And so even though it was dry over the winter, they were dormant as we got into spring here when the fires occur.
As we think about the next 2 to 3 months, you obviously said the next couple weeks to a month are going to be critical just with the wind we may have and not have much in terms of precip. But what are some key dates for producers, both on the Lusk Canyon complex there in Lincoln County, as well as the Sand Hills, Mitch? What are some key dates producers maybe need to be thinking about as they think about when can I graze, when could I turn out, or do I need to delay turn out maybe to this fall and think about not grazing at all during the growing season?
Well, I'll speak to the Lusk Canyons, and Mitch could talk more about on the Sand Hills. But with the Lusk Canyons, we're dealing with a little more, I guess, as the name implies, a silty loam soil or lust soil that are not as prone to wind erosion. They have some pretty steep and rough canyons in that area, so one of the things in those canyons, we can have some pretty good water erosion, and with the loss of grass cover, that water erosion can be an issue. But overall, those Lusk Canyons are probably more, I guess, resilient, if you will, to the effects of a fire. I mentioned in the areas I've seen here just recently, we have some cool season grasses already starting to green up and poke through in those burned areas. And here we are in late March, and of course it's been an unusually warm March, and so far we could say our spring is ahead of time. So in those Lusk Canyons, I guess again, precipitation is still going to be a driving factor if needed, or if we don't have the luxury of pasture elsewhere. I don't see anything wrong with waiting until 1st of July and having an evaluation of some of your burned pastures and see if it might not be okay to turn out at that time. And that shouldn't be a problem. There's probably more cool season grasses in those Lusk Canyons than in the Sand Hills.
Yeah, I mean, with sedges and cool season grasses that we see on the upland dunes, on your sand sites, which are more your rolling hills, you'll start to see those coming in once we get some precipitation up there, right? And it doesn't take a whole lot. It just takes enough to kind of get things rolling with some of that growth. But primarily, a lot of the growth that ends up happening in the sand hills, really doesn't kick off until, mid-May. We get conditions right. And even on our cool season grasses, which we'll see some growth in late April and early May, really valuable to get these spring precipitation, even snow events to help with some of that soil moisture and getting things rolling. But a lot of that growth ends up really taking off in May. And so it's really going to be driven, I think, by that. The cool seasons are going to be driven primarily by that May and early June precipitation that we get. And then as most of the cool season grasses go reproductive maturity right around that mid-June, and then the June precipitation that are going to be the big driver of their early growth, I should say, on the warm seasons. And then if we do get July precipitation, that's usually when, like Jerry mentioned, that's usually where we really see those warm seasons put on some really good growth in some of the timing of the precipitation. And so, as far as dates go, those would be what I would be looking at, or going out and checking would be, like, how does it look for our cool season grass growth? In the sand hills there on our sand sites, we might see, 30%, maybe a little bit more in some areas of our cool season growth. On a choppy sands upland sites, it might be a little bit less than that, and more of our warm season species that are out there. And so I go out and check out that, I think in our lowland areas, both sub-irrigated and those kind of dry flats, really kind of check those out as well. That's probably where we're going to see most of our early growth happening on there, or more recovery in some of those areas before we see some in the uplands too. And so could be some opportunities, especially on some of these sub-irrigated sites that could be open for grazing even before some we feel comfortable sending out some of our uplands. But if we do have a pretty good growth on our cool season grasses by late May, early June, and it looks like our warm seasons are coming in well, it never hurts to defer grazing, right? If you feel like it needs to just get a little bit more growth, we often say defer. When we say defer grazing, that usually means we defer until some key plants have reached reproductive maturity. And so if you're looking for deferring until your warm season grasses have reached maturity, it might be in August or September before you would think about turning out in some of those pastures. And so those are just some things to consider, right? And if we turn into a drought situation, if we're thinking worst case scenario, like a 2012 scenario, which I hope, and knock on wood, I hope that's not going to be the case. But if we do hit a drought scenario like that, then I mean, we're going to have to reduce stocking rate over a larger area, right? Whether it's burned or it's not burned, to account for the lower amounts of forage that's going to be out there. And so I think managing it early on, seeing where we're going to be, but then really thinking about, okay, if we've hit this hard drought, then how are we going to manage this moving forward? And so it may be that we switch it over and we graze it some in the dormant season, and then really give it maybe more in that second year, even some opportunities to regrow. Now, I'll just say it here, though, is sometimes we do take a conservative approach, and that's oftentimes what we recommend. Our grasslands are different between like the Luss Hills and the Sand Hills, or I think of like the Flint Hills down in Kansas. Granted, they're getting more precipitation there, different plant community, different soil type, where they are burning and they are grazing in the same year. And we've done a little bit of research. It's not tied to wildfires, it's more tied to prescribed fires, but they are spring dormant season fires that we've tried, where we have turned cattle out right away on them. And generally speaking, we've done it in a patch burn graze scenario, where we've only burned a small section of the whole pasture, like a quarter of the pasture, and then so cattle had access to that, but they also had access to unburned areas as well. So there was plenty of forage out there for them. They could pick and choose where they grazed, essentially. And then we did 3 years of a study on that at the Barter Brothers Ranch, which is in the eastern Nebraska sandhills. So it's getting a few more inches of precipitation than the Morrill Fire sandhills there, and a little bit different sand hills. But in regards to what we saw as recovery, the cattle grazed that during the growing season. They grazed it fairly heavy in that regard. And then what we saw is that following year, we saw reduced amounts of warm season grass production, which we kind of expected. You burn it and then you heavy graze it. Dormant season burning didn't really cause much of an issue in terms of the biomass that was produced, but it was grazed on that, and they grazed it heavier than they did the unburned sites. But we did see a reduction that following year in the amount of warm season grass production. And we saw an increase in the amount of forb production, mostly because of annual forbs like our annual sunflowers that we see out there, and a few other species that really took advantage of some of that opening up of the places that we heavily grazed. But we rotated where the fire was in the following years, and what we saw is that by years 2, 3, and 4, that biomass had recovered almost to the same level. Well, the biomass had recovered to the same level as unburned, and the standing dead plant material had also recovered in that regards as well. And so as we think about this out 2 to 3 years, and think about grazing on some of these burned areas, there is a potential that if you do heavily graze it, that it will take a little bit longer. But as I kind of think about it, is our grasses kind of know the drill, right? They've had thousands and thousands of years of drought and fire and grazing. And so they know what recovery looks like in that regards, or else they built resilience into the system. And so I do think our plant communities are resilient to this, but it does take a little bit of time to get them back to the same level as they were before that fire rolled through these areas. So yeah, oftentimes the having a thinking multiple years ahead and having a conservative approach might be the best. But if there are instances where you just can't and you need to get cattle out, I do think that there's recovery that can happen in those places too. It just might take a little bit longer. And then just to be careful of not putting too many animals out and really overgrazing it, or opening up maybe some of these areas that might be more prone to wind erosion and have blowouts.
On that point, Mitch, of grazing this year, if needed, one of the things sometimes we run across is we have pastures that might have been only partially burned, how irregular fire patterns can be. And of course, a lot of times it's just impractical to try to fence out these burned areas in most cases. But generally, I think we can say that if it's we're at late July, by that point, there should not be that much of a difference in grazing selection in the burned versus unburned area. Would you agree with that?
Going into the burned area more than the unburned?
Right.
Yeah.
By the time we get to late July, say, for example, that there shouldn't be too much of a selection pref or preferences, right?
Yeah, so the stuff that we showed that it was by about mid-July where their selection was no different between a burned site and an unburned site. And so, yeah, I think if you were to defer that, then it would probably limit some of that selective pressure on the unburned sites there. It probably will still be there some, but it probably will be less.
Mitch, Jerry, any other key things you think producers should be thinking through as they think about their management of these burn sites as we move through the rest of 2026 and into 27?
I think we've covered the main points pretty well. Again, while things may look pretty devastating, immediately after the fire, that as long as we get some good, decent, or at least average precipitation, they're going to be bouncing back. And overall, I've been thinking that if we compared a wildfire compared to a severe drought, I think the impacts of a severe drought are greater than that of a wildfire, particularly if we had, say, a severe drought 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Jerry, there that oftentimes these wildfires and droughts go hand in hand because the conditions are more in line, especially following years that might have been a little bit above average for growth, and there's a little bit more fuels out there. And I think monitoring, it's always what we talk about is monitoring. And if you do have some pastures that you thought weren't quite as healthy as before, or they maybe not as much cover of grasses and forbs as you would like in those pastures, then they might take a little bit longer as well. And so really kind of thinking through what your pasture condition and health was before the fire went through can help drive maybe some of the management that goes on afterwards as well. And so I think taking pictures is a great way to monitor. So, documenting where things are at, what they look like, pulling up old grazing records and placing out where you feel some of your pastures might have been in terms of going into this growing season, I think can help make some management decisions on how to manage them moving forward. But I do think just monitoring drought and where we're at, and then monitoring what growth looks like this year. You know, I mean, with diverse systems that we have here in the Sandhills and the Lusk Canyons as well, you know, with both warm and cool season grasses, I think it's just important to note what kind of growth looked like for cool seasons, because some of the work that we've been doing at Goodmanson Sandhills Lab shows that there's a previous year effect of weather conditions on current year's growth, especially with some of our cool season grasses. If it's a dry year this year, then next year it's likely going to have reduced cool season grasses. And if we have a really good June precipitation and we get a lot of growth on some of our warm season, that's likely going to carry us over into the next year as well and some of our growth patterns that we see. And so monitoring precipitation, monitoring the weather, monitoring our range condition, I think are all going to be really important variables to help think through what are our options and what possibilities can we have. You know, some folks, it's if they have opportunities to graze elsewhere, that really gives a lot of flexibility to let those pastures recover. Others, that if you need to graze some of it, or there's a need in areas that might be a little bit better off in the recovery, like I'm talking like sub-irrigated sites, those types of things. If we can get some grazing down on those, you know, I think that they should recover very quickly from a fire like this. And I know they're in the Morrill fire anyways, there are several sub-irrigated sites that should be getting enough moisture from the sub-irrigation to really put on the plant biomass and recover very quickly.
Dr. Valesky, Dr. Stevenson, thanks for your time today. Obviously, these are hard events for folks who've been impacted by them, but I think the good news is that with some adequate moisture, these range sites will recover and hopefully see some actually improvement in some of these sites that maybe had some undesirable cedars present, maybe a silver lining to a difficult event.
Absolutely. I mean, just really hard. And my hat's off to the firefighters and everybody that rushed to the fires. It was just a really, really tough couple weeks. And so, you know, our thoughts are with everybody that's going through that. And I'll just, you know, just want to say that Nebraska Extension is here. And if there's any needs, or if you just want somebody to come out and drive through your pastures and walk through them and talk about what you're seeing, both Jerry and I would be more than happy to do that, as well as I know there's other people that would be as well. And so very open for that.
Yep, that's right. That sounds good. We'd be more than happy to do that.
Well, for more information on the content that was discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find the article at beef.unl.edu. At the website, you also can find the contact information for both Dr. Jerry Valesky, he's at North Platte, as well as Dr. Mitch Stevenson, who's based at Scotts Bluff.